From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting that President Donald Trump prepares to announce whether he will reimpose sanctions on Iran, effectively walking away from the 2015 International Nuclear Accord. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani issued a warning Sunday such a decision would bring the U.S. remorse. In a speech carried on state television, Mr. Rouhani said orders have been issued to Iran's Atomic Energy Organization and the economic sector. Mr. Trump has denounced the deal as flawed, his decision expected by Saturday. U.S. allies, including Britain, are urging Washington to stay in the deal and change its flaws. Kim Derrick, the UK ambassador, appeared on the CBS program Face the Nation.
We think it's a good deal. It's not a perfect deal. No deal ever is perfect. And the president is rightly concerned about Iran's regional activities, which are malign and damaging to security and stability. And he doesn't like the fact that ballistic missiles aren't covered. He's not happy about the sunset clauses. He thinks the inspections regime should be tougher.
British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson is due in Washington this week to discuss the matter. On Fox News Sunday, the Republican chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Congressman Mac Thornberry, urged the president to stay in the deal.
Does Iran kick those inspectors out so that we lose what visibility we have there? The Europeans are not going to reimpose sanctions. So where does that leave us and Iran? So I'm not necessarily opposed to sticking with this deal forever, but you need to have a clearer idea about next steps.
Israel's prime minister again Sunday called for an end to the agreement. Tunisia's Islamist Ennahda party has claimed victory in the North African country's first free municipal election, in which low voter turnout participation was reported. This is VOA News. Turnout for Lebanon's first National Assembly elections in 9 years Sunday was just over 49%, compared to 54% in 2009, and despite last-minute calls for citizens to cast ballots. The Iranian-backed Hezbollah was expected to emerge in a stronger position. Independent candidate Gilbert Dumit said, while some areas had higher voter participation, it appears parties were unable to motivate many people to cast ballots. Despite a new proportional voting scheme, the outcome is not expected to significantly alter the decades-old sectarian political system. The rights group Amnesty International has accused Egypt of keeping political prisoners in prolonged and indefinite solitary confinement and subjecting them to physical abuse. It cites rights activists, Islamist journalists, and the political opposition among those political prisoners. Egypt has detained thousands since the military ousted Islamist president Mohamed Morsi in 2013, but denies systematic rights abuses. Italian researchers Sunday said they found no evidence of the existence of any hidden chambers behind the walls in the tomb of the Egyptian boy king Tutankhamun. Francesco Porcelli said his team used 3 radar systems with different frequencies.
The fact that we used the 3 radar systems was very important because it allowed us to cross-check the result and also to resolve some complexity in the data which we found that probably affected the results of the 2 previous radars.
Experts have argued over the existence of a concealed chamber behind the tomb, which could have been the final resting place for the lost queen, Nefertiti. In Afghanistan, a bomb blast inside a mosque used as a voting registration center in the east province of Khost near Pakistan Sunday killed at least 14 people and wounded more than 30. The country is preparing for October district council elections. The Islamic State claimed a suicide bombing at a voting registration center in Kabul last month that killed 60. Indian soldiers shot dead 5 protesters and wounded dozens of others Sunday in an anti-militant operation. Among the dead, Saddam Potter, a Hizbul Mujahideen commander, and Mohammad Rafi Blatt, a Kashmiri professor. The shootout followed last month's operation in which 4 civilians were killed. Pakistan's Interior Minister Ahsan Iqbal was wounded Sunday in an apparent assassination attempt in Punjab province as he left a constituency meeting. The alleged gunman was arrested. Iqbal is being treated in Lahore. In Poland, 2 coal miners were killed and 3 are still trapped nearly a kilometer underground following an earthquake in southern Poland near the Czech Republic Saturday. Rescuers pumped air into the shaft to lower the level of dangerous methane gas as their search continued. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, May 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Schools open tomorrow, Tuesday, in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, but many children will attend without the usual free food.
It is not only the problem of children needing food, but it is a countrywide problem where the educational system is crumbling.
Mpalanda Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo Party. IGA invites South Sudan warring parties to another consultation this week in Ethiopia. Burundi's opposition accuses the government of harassment and intimidation during the ongoing referendum campaign. And South African mine workers want more security as seven miners died from the latest accident last week.
Inside deep mines like this, surely you must have a research that always improves the technology of detecting what leads to be the cause of the accident.
Joseph Matunjua is the president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. And more people are displaced from heavy rains in Kenya. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Schools in the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, are set to open tomorrow, Tuesday, but many children will be attending without the usual free food. Lucky Mlovu, the Deputy Prime Minister's Office Director of Children's Services, said on Sunday that the UNICEF initiative Neighborhood Care Point was short of food because donors were focusing on other countries. This comes at a time when some reports say King Mswati III wore a watch worth $1.6 million at his 50th birthday. Mpalanda Shwangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo Party. He says the situation in Eswatini goes beyond the lack of food for children to the inability of the government to pay its teachers on time.
The situation here, it's a very, very, very bad situation, especially because it is not only the problem of children needing food, but it is a countrywide problem where the educational system is crumbling down, where government cannot pay in time fees for the schools, cannot pay in time assistant workers who are assisting in the running of schools, let alone provide enough food for the children.
I was talking about this Lucky Lovu. He said that the reason that there's this food shortage for children is because the donors who normally give food supply have decided that they are not going to do so because they believe there's enough money in Swaziland, but it's not being used wisely.
That is correct. If you see the extravagance that the government is going through, more especially recently, we have just celebrated 50 years of independence and 50 years birthday of our king. You can tell that there is money in this country. The only problem is that it is wrongly used. Yes, I agree with the donors and I support their stand that they should withdraw this funding. In fact, I would like to put the blame at the doorsteps of the very same donors, the EU in particular, because the EU has taken it upon itself to actually run the educational system of Swaziland. And we don't know why they have been doing this. They have been paying for the free primary education for government, and this has been giving government enough money to waste such that they think the issue of feeding or looking after students is somebody's else's duty, not their duty.
King Mswati III, what is he saying? There are some reports here that he was seen wearing a watch that's worth a U.S. $1.6 million at his 50th birthday celebration. What is he saying? Does he have a role to play if there's no food for the children?
As the head of government and as the head of the country, he's supposed to be the first person to care for these children. But most unfortunately, it looks like he is a distant away from reality. I believe that maybe, I don't know how, but he seems not to be aware of the sufferings of his people. If you look at the extravagant waste of public funds, imagine on top of those watches, on top of those diamonds, we have witnessed a buying of a 200 million jet. So you can actually see that there is enough money to take care of everybody.
Umpalana Shangwe is the second deputy secretary of the banned opposition Pudemo party. He was speaking with me from the Eswatini capital, Mbabane. In South Africa, the National Union of Mine Workers says it wants to meet with the management of the Sibanye Stillwater mine to discuss safety. This after seven of the 13 miners trapped underground last week died. Joseph Matunjua is president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. He says mine owners have for long paid lip service to safety issues, focusing instead on profits. Matunjua says owners should invest in technology that improves the safety of workers.
Safety has been the challenge in the history of mining in South Africa. Yes, there were some legislations that were passed that were to avoid accidents. But these accidents are still happening. Officer, we believe that the mines are not doing enough. They are chasing the profit in the expense of the lives of the workers. They are not investing much on new innovations and research. Therefore, in such deep mines like this, surely you must have a research that always improves the technology of detecting what believed to be the cause of the accident. So these workers are earning a slave salary, and then the mines are failing to provide adequate safety.
One would think that doing deep level mining, that is by itself is dangerous. So what do you think the mining companies can do or the government can do?
I think it's to put new regulations. For instance, the safety threshold should be in place to say, if maybe you pass 1 kilometer or 2 kilometers, these are the standards of safety that is expected or is required as a must that must be in place. As we go deeper, also the safety should be improved to measure the risk that the workers will be exposed to.
What about seismic activities? What is this fall of ground and what causes that?
The fall of ground is in twofold. One, it's a lack of proper support of the roof of the mine. The second one is a seismic event that you just spoke about, of which majority or the mine workers, they do not have access of the information when the seismic event takes place. It's only the line management that has a first-hand information. So if they are chasing a profit, they will be compromised themselves to evacuate the workers from the production line. For instance, the one from Sibanye Platinum, I believe, and I still stand by what I'm saying, those workers could have been saved because the first seismic event of 2.5, that was a largest or a high level of a seismic event, of which if we had a responsible management that put the lives or the safety first, they should have withdrawn all the workers from the face and direct them to the waiting place, a safety place, and wait for certain hours before they resume their operation.
Joseph Matunjua is the president of the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union of South Africa. He was speaking with me from the city of Witbank in Mpumalanga province. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, May 7th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. Burundi's opposition has accused the ruling party of harassment and intimidation during the ongoing campaign for the country's controversial constitutional amendment referendum launched last week. Moses Javier Rimana has the story from Bujumbura.
Today marks 6 days since the Independent Electoral Commission officially launched the nationwide campaign to oppose or support the amendment of the country's constitution. More than 20 political parties are campaigning for or against the revision of the constitution, which may see the scrapping of the presidential term limits. Burundi opposition leader and the deputy speaker of the parliament, Agathon Rwasa, who opposed the amendment of the constitution, said that his members were harassed and intimidated by the ruling party Sindede FDD members.
I don't know if it is due to panicking that these guys from the Sindede FDD are blocking people to join the meeting place. They are threatening transporters that if they dare hire their cars to us, they will ban them. They could invade the place we were supposed to hold our meetings.
Burundi's ruling party, Sindede-FDD, declined to comment on record but denied the allegation that their members have been menacing the opposition supporters. Prosper Nahoramie is the spokesman of the Independent Electoral Commission. He says that the Electoral Commission knows nothing about the allegations made by the opposition and that for now, the report they have is that the referendum campaigns are going on well. He said that all those opposing and supporting the amendment of the constitution have got equal rights to campaign. As Burundi on 17th this month is expected to vote for or against the constitution amendment, it is yet to be known whether the regional mediated dialogue will resume if at all the constitution is amended that will see parts of the Arusha agreement scrapped, which includes the presidential term limit. Agathon Rwasa said that the East African community leaders didn't do enough.
We don't think that they will be able to move forward because they neglected ever since to do whatever was in their possibility to help this dialogue move forward. Unless they do it to try to help the regime to continue persecuting people.
The country's constitution was on the center stage of the political crisis since 2015 after the incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza vied for a controversial third term in the office. Critics say that the amendment of the constitution is nothing but to pave way for the incumbent president to rule the country until 2034. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The South Sudan government says it is ready to negotiate with anybody, anytime and anywhere because it has always wanted peace for the country. This comes after the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGA, has invited the main parties to Ethiopia for consultations. The regional group says it wants to break the stalemate during the next round of talks slated for May 17th. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says the regional body's shuttle diplomacy has so far failed to produce results because IGAD has so far not been able to iron out the differences between the positions of the parties.
What I know is that when the IGAD delegation came to us here and they went back in Addis Ababa for 4 days, and our advice to them was that as long as you have decided to go in for a chattering diplomacy does not mean that you visit me once and you go back, talk to others once and you go back. You are supposed to carry messages and proposals and positions from the different parties, exchange views, and you come up with your own proposals as well so that you can at least bring the parties together and make them understand the situation better. But if you come once and then you decide to call the party, then definitely your efforts of settling diplomacy are bound to fail. Because so far, when they came to us here, they did not even tell us as to whether they have reached anything with the opposition on the other side on any of the points. Instead, what they brought to us were actually issues that widened the gap further.
So, as you said, Minister, there are widening gaps between your position and that of the rebels. At some point, people thought that both sides were intransigent. So, has there been any change in the positions?
Well, the government had ever been there. We clearly stated last time that the position which were presented on Chapter 1 and Chapter 2 are negotiating positions. The opposition so far has not tabled anything before the mediators up to now. Instead, they wait for the position prepared by mediators and they pick that position. which is not correct. An example is that they are talking of none of the parties should have even a simple majority in the parliament. If there is no simple majority, if you have 50-50 in the cabinet, it means that the cabinet will never pass any resolution. So to us, in fact, the position which they brought has even widened the gap further.
The next consultation is coming up probably this week, May 10th to the 12th, and then the next round is the 17th. Do you think it's worth it to go if these positions have not been ironed out?
Well, it is not advisable to call the parties as long as IGAD has not yet ironed out some of these differences, at least to bridge the gap. And as long as the gap is getting wider and wider, then why call the parties? Why call people for an obvious outcome?
Meaning an obvious outcome of failure?
Yes, definitely.
So does that mean the South Sudan government will not attend or will attend this meeting?
We are ready to negotiate with anybody, anytime, anywhere, and so forth. Because what we need is peace for our people. But unfortunately, and to our surprise, the mediators, instead of asking the other party, instead of asking the opposition to give their written position, they instead respond to our position, which is not to me. In my weak opinion, I believe that this is not supposed to be the position of a mediator.
South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. More than 100 people have died in Kenya in the last month due to heavy rains in different parts of the country, according to the latest statistics from the Kenya Red Cross Society, which is now asking the Kenyan government to declare a national disaster.
This is the third month since Kenya started experiencing heavy rains and some places have been declared no-go zone. Property has been lost and learning in some areas has been paralyzed as some schools have been submerged. Kenya Red Cross Secretary General Abbas Gullet says even though schools have opened, but students have not been able to learn because their schools are being used as emergency shelters while other schools have been swept away.
Schools, in fact, I could say the numbers are beyond even 100, but there are 29, I say, to be submerged because a number of schools also have become the IDP camps where people have taken refuge in those compounds. 32 counties have been affected. So you could see the extent and the enormity of the challenge that we have here. So road damage, and this has affected the movement of supplies and people.
Leaders are now calling upon the government to intervene and take appropriate measures to curb the situation. Sabina Aroni is education director in Kisumu County, a county that has immensely been affected by the rains.
12 schools were affected to a level that they were not able to open on Monday, the 30th of April, 2018. However, the rains are erratic and the amount of floods, any particular school changes from day to day.
On the other hand, security officers in affected areas are trying to ensure the residents are safe. The officers say there is a high risk of residents being affected with communicable diseases like malaria. Kisumu County Commissioner Pauline Dola says the government is working to ensure flood relief and medical care are offered to affected persons.
Security team and Muhoroni sub-county security team, we've been going around checking the havoc that the recent floods have caused. And the government is organizing for some food relief. This will be distributed to those victims. And we are also in liaison with both the county government and national government to ensure that we get some medication, especially malaria.
However, Nandi County Governor Stephen Sang has suspended ongoing public works to reduce damage and losses.
Over the last 2 months, our county has recorded extensive loss of property, public infrastructure, and utilities due to the heavy downpour. The devastation caused by the heavy rains have pounded the county and has forced us to review our road maintenance activities. Therefore, I do hereby suspend all the ongoing works.
Affected residents seeking refuge are now asking the government to ensure they are safe while those who lost their loved ones blamed the government for negligence, even though they had been given prior warning.
People from this place should take caution. This place is next to Nairobi, and it attracts many people. So water dynamics are different, and we are also next to Ngong Hills. If it rains in Ngong, water tanks are too high, so it's important we be careful.
The Kenya Meteorological Department has warned that the rains will go on for the next 5 days, while the Red Cross says it needs more than 400 million Kenya shillings for emergency funding. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Moreno Jambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
For Daybreak Africa, person here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with match day one results of the CAF Champions League played this past weekend. Title holders Wydad Casablanca of Morocco survived a late siege by Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa in Pretoria to force a 1-1 draw. In the other Group C match, Horoya of Guinea kept a 100% away record in the competition this season by edging Port of Togo 2-1 in Lome, with captain Abubakar Kamara scoring the winner. TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo made an impressive start in Group B by whipping fellow former African champions Entete Sative of Algeria 4-1 in Lubumbashi. In Group D, favourites Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia, the only winners of all five present and past CAF club competitions, came from behind to hold Primeiro Augusto of Angola 1-1 in Luanda. In the same group, Mongaliso Shongwe scored on 80 minutes to earn Mbambe Swallows of Swaziland a 1-1 draw away to 2016 Champions League semi-finalist Zesco United of Zambia Ndola. Deji Ogenyebo and Ferdinand Ubum are sports journalists who were not surprised at the weekend's match day one results in the group stages of the CAF Champions League.
Well, still some dominant names in the CAF competitions. Unsurprisingly, TP Mazembe, their forte has always been the CAF Champions League, and they are back better, eating Etienne Sertif for 4, ended 4-1. For Wydad Casablanca, surprisingly, they ploughed a 1-1 draw against Mamelodi Sundowns. It's a good result away from home.
For Wydad Casablanca, I do not think it's a surprise, owing to the fact that they are the title holders of this competition. I think that alone is a confidence booster. You know, for Mamelodi Sundowns, they won the competition a couple of seasons ago, as well as TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo. These are teams that have tradition over the years.
Staying with football, Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa will face Spanish giant Barcelona on May 16 in an international club friendly match. The friendly against Barca is expected to be confirmed in Spain later today and will be staged at the 90,000 capacity Soccer City Stadium in Soweto. Coach Pitso Mesemane is a coach of the Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa.
It will be the second time Mamelodi Sundowns play FC Barcelona. But it's a different one. There's Messi on it, and there's Iniesta, there's Busquets. I think it's an honor for the team to benefit from such an opportunity.
And now to athletics news. William Yagon of Kenya and Amelewok Fakadu of Ethiopia took their respective titles at the Harmony Geneva Marathon for UNICEF, an IWAF bronze medal road race on Sunday.
That was Samson Omale reporting from Abuja, Nigeria. And that is it for this Monday, May 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and former Prime Minister Raila Odinga have agreed to end their political animosity. A discussion on Kenyan politics on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important after news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.